ghost that hath come from the earth, or a phantom of night that hath no home, or one that lieth dead in the desert, or a ghost unburied, or a demon, or a ghoul. Whatever thou be, until thou art removed, thou shalt find here no water to drink. Thou shalt not stretch forth thy hand to our own. Into our house enter thou not. Through our fence break through thou not. We are protected, though we may be frightened. Our life you may not steal, though we may be scared to death.
Welcome to Scared to Death, Creeps, Peepers, Roberts and Annabelles, and Lindsay.
Oh.
Welcome. I'm welcoming you to the show today.
Oh, I thought you were like, and there's a new tier of Patreon. It's the Lindsay tier. Everyone can be a Lindsay.
No, I was just extending a welcome to you.
Damn it. I just got so excited that I was going to be so special.
You're still special.
Well, you know what I mean.
I'm Dan. This is Lindsay.
Hello.
And we have a fun show for you today. Well, fun asterisk.
Define fun.
I'm very excited about, I'll tell you in a second.
Okay.
About the previews, but we have a couple quick announcements.
Okay.
We have some merch that I think you're going to be excited about.
Probably.
Fun new merch in the store, badmagicmerch.com. Surprised at how many fans actually requested this collection. Now in store, the Spoopy Bitch mini collection.
Yes, this is true. There was a lot of, asking for that.
You can grab your tea, your crop hoodie, your coffee mug at badmagicmerch.com. You can show your coworkers just how spoopy you really are. I guess you can also kind of show them, how much of a bitch you are, but in a good way.
Yeah, be careful with that word, buddy.
In a good, the good kind. If you buy any of this stuff, people are going to think like, there's a good bitch right there. A good spoopy bitch.
Some people will be very confused, which will also be really fun for you.
Yeah, true. And then a quick charity announcement. The first Bad Magic Productions charity of 2022 is still Love Thy Neighbor. Now we know the donation amount. $15,500. Thank you, Annabelles, for your contributions to this awesome donation. We met the lovely ladies who run this 501c3 nonprofit, primarily serving Denver and the surrounding area last time I was touring there, doing shows at Comedy Works. Working with generous local businesses, they hand out free food to the homeless, also give clothing, shoes, blankets, etc., distribute them to the homeless, literally help keep people alive by supplying them, food, clothing, and more in a very cold, harsh city in the winter.
Oh man, in Colorado, like those wildfires that were ripping through suburbs.
Crazy.
Yep, more than ever, they're going to be needed.
So to find out more, you can go to ltnsocks.com. They also give some fun socks away to people who donate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So now it's story time.
Oh wow, that was just like two very quick amounts.
It's two quick announcements.
It's two quick announcements.
Well, I told you I was going to burn through those announcements.
Oh no, have you given me your mush mouth?
Oh man, maybe.
Is it contagious?
It might be.
Oh no.
I can't believe it took you this long to get it.
Now you've got it back.
How many stories do you have today?
I have two. I have two, and we have an interesting haunted child. So interesting to think about, what would you do if your kid maybe didn't necessarily believe in the paranormal, or maybe wasn't even aware of it,
right?
But you were certain they had an attachment.
Okay.
And sticking with the child theme, my second story, the email, what was the title? Haunted Toddler in the Basement.
Jeez.
And I was like, well, that sounds terrible.
That sounds good and creepy.
Yeah. So there you have it. A kid theme in a not creepy, creepy way.
Sure. Sure. I get you. You have your two. I have two as well. First set in Delaware, Lums Pond State Park. Where, according to legend, a young woman was murdered a century and a half ago, and her spirit still roams the woods, still looking for her killer. And then next, we'll go to an unknown small town in Nebraska where a man is confronted by the angry ghost of someone he really didn't care for in life, who he now really, really doesn't care for in death. This one gave me the most chills of any story that I've come across in the last month or so. So I'll be curious how it spooks you as well.
Good luck. I'm feeling very resilient right now. So.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
You have to try hard.
Okay, I'll try.
Yeah.
Are you ready to dig in? A little bit of setup with this first one.
Yes, I've got on some fun unicorn socks.
Those are fun. They have the actual horn on them.
I know. I love them.
Those are really fun socks.
They're really distracting because you just kind of want to do this for a while. And yeah, I'm going to get cozy and you get us going.
All right. Sounds good. Lums Pond State Park, located in Bear, Delaware, is a beautiful, well-maintained natural site where campers and anglers come from all over to enjoy a peaceful retreat in nature. There are several campsites, bathrooms, a fishing platform, various park benches with scenic views, other amenities, and two hiking trails that weave through the pond's edge, the Jersey Trail and the Swamp Forest Trail. And the Swamp Forest Trail is a known paranormal hotspot. In the 1870s, an unnamed young woman from Newcastle County ran away from home and ended up in what is now the park. It's a long ways from being a park back then. Wild, remote land. Back then, undeveloped, dense, dark patch of woods. This woman decided to camp out in the woods her first night away from home. Some man found her. Based on the state of her body, when it was found later, he had raped her and left her for dead. Before she died, some locals heard her screaming late into the night, but they weren't able to find her body until long after she died of her injuries.
Man.
Her body wasn't found for several days, actually. Found in some thick, marshy brush next to what is now the Swamp Forest Trail. And her killer never found.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Ever since, several times a year it seems, always after sunset, hikers still hear her screaming, her gut-wrenching cries for help echoing from somewhere near the trail, and every once in a while, some claim to encounter her ghost. Today's story comes from a young woman who visited the campgrounds a few years ago and claims to be one of the unlucky few who had an unlucky close encounter with the ghost of Lum's Pond State Park. Time now for the tale of the ghost of the girl in the woods. Sam and Bailey are one of those couples that love to go camping and hiking every chance they get. At least they used to. And not just because it was cheap. Instead of romantic getaways to fancy hotels or resorts, they preferred to hit campsites across the country and rough it when they had a free week or a free weekend. And one weekend several years back, the campsite they chose was at Lum's Pond State Park. Lum's Pond isn't a real well-known state park, not usually on anyone's top 10 list, but Sam and Bailey were both originally from the nearby town of Newark, and even though neither of them had visited the park growing up, a friend had told them it was a hidden gem, and they booked a spot. On a crisp early fall Saturday morning, Sam and Bailey packed up their camping gear and got into the car, bringing their dog Millie with them. Millie was pumped. Tail wagging and ears up, she didn't usually get to go on mom and dad's trips, but Lum's Park was super dog-friendly, with plenty of trails for walks. The outdoorsy couple set up their campsite, spent the afternoon walking the Jersey Trail. They ate dinner in the early evening, spent some time by a nice fire, and then got ready to head into the tent and crash for the night. "I need to take Millie on one last walk," Bailey told Sam as he tossed what garbage would burn into the campfire he'd put out when Bailey got back, and gathered up the rest to take to a nearby park dumpster. Bailey watched Millie's ears perk up excitedly. Sam looked up at the sky. "I don't know," he said hesitantly. "Does she really need one? It's so dark. Can't she just pee around the tent? If you want to wait a little while, I'll go with you." Bailey gave him a patient smile. "It'll be fine. This place is full of other campers, and we'll stick to the trail." Sam, the worrier of the relationship, sighed. "Okay, just please take your phone so I can check in if I get worried and come back soon." "Okay, Grandpa," Bailey teased before planting a kiss on top of his head. "You have nothing to worry about. Come on, Millie." Bailey snapped a leash onto Millie's harness, and flashlight in hand, the two set off to find a good place for Millie to mark her territory. Two signs stood in front of her, one for the Jersey Trail and one for the Swamp Forest Trail. She asked herself, should she take the familiar route or maybe do a little exploring? She and Sam were supposed to take the Swamp Forest Trail tomorrow, but the curious side of Bailey wanted to preview it now and won out. Bailey took the Swamp Forest path, pulling Millie along with her. They continued walking in silence for a few minutes. Soon, at least a few hundred yards away from any other campers, the only sounds they could hear were their own footsteps crunching over leaves and sticks. Since they were alone, Bailey unclipped Millie's harness, letting her walk freely. It was against park rules, but Millie was a good dog, and she always went to the bathroom a little faster if she was able to roam a bit. The two continued strolling along, Millie happily sniffing away at anything she could find. Suddenly, not only could Bailey not hear any of the other campers, she couldn't see the lights from their camps either. Actually, it might have been several minutes, maybe five since she could. She checked her phone, realized they'd walked for a lot longer than she'd intended. They left camp 10 minutes ago, and she didn't have a cell signal even though she had almost full bars back at the campsite. She wandered into a little dead zone, and now she wanted to start heading back. "Millie," Bailey called, "time to go back. Come, Millie." Millie was a good 40 or 50 feet further down the trail than she was, and after calling her, instead of hearing the pitter-patter of her paws on the trail as she ran back to her and the jingling of her dog tags against her collar, Bailey heard a low, aggressive growl. Millie was crouched low, baring her teeth, growling at something out in the forest. Seeing this gave Bailey the chills. Millie was 8 years old, and Bailey had literally never seen her do this before. Was there some kind of predator lurking out in the woods waiting to attack them? She hadn't seen any warning signs for black bears, bobcats, cougars, or wolves. From what she understood, seeing any of those animals would be extremely rare, not only in this park, but anywhere in Delaware. She thought briefly about what an incredibly terrible and unlucky time it would be to see one of those creatures now. Bailey knew the best course of action was to keep calm and walk back to camp. She called softly for her dog again. "Millie, girl, come. Millie, come here." Millie continued growling. She didn't even move to acknowledge that she'd heard Bailey calling for her. Bailey now walked up slowly behind Millie, ready to clip her back into her leash, pull her down the trail towards camp. Millie's growling had turned into snarling. Bailey felt sick. Their dog didn't come on vacation with them often, but she'd been on over a dozen camping trips. She'd seen plenty of other animals, and Bailey had never seen her react to anything like this. Bailey peered into the forest in front of her, trying to see what was causing Millie such distress. Then an ear-piercing scream echoed from the nearby woods. Millie shot forward, running straight off the trail and out into the dark forest. "No!" Bailey shouted, instinctively running after her. She heard a blood-curdling scream cut through the forest. It sounded like a woman's voice. Bailey didn't know what to do. She was afraid to keep running further out into the dark woods. She didn't have phone reception or any weapons. Sam didn't even know where she was. He probably assumed she'd take another trail if he came looking. She didn't want to not help this woman, but she also didn't want to be attacked by whoever might be attacking her. She was worried about herself, she was worried about Millie, and she was worried about what might be happening to this unknown girl screaming for her life. She sounded like she was in a lot of pain. "Hello?" Bailey called out. "Are you okay?" she called out louder. She now reached a clearing in the woods. It felt especially dark here. Colder, too. "Is anyone here?" she called out again. Now she could see her breath. "Millie! Millie!" She grew scared and she called out for her dog, spinning around looking for her. She had no idea where she was now. Bailey then heard leaves crunching behind her. Relief flooded in. It must be Millie coming back to her. Thank God. But when Bailey turned around, she didn't see her dog. Instead, she saw the shadowy figure of a woman peeking out from behind a large tree. Bailey froze, not sure what to do. Her heart began pounding. Her fear responses surging. Bailey opened and closed her mouth, but couldn't form any words. "Do you know?" the woman's voice croaked. Bailey hesitated before answering. What? Where is he? I don't understand. Help me." A pale, dirty hand reached out from behind the tree, fingers stretching towards her. Without thinking, Bailey reached out her hand, brushing her fingers against the girl's, so cold. "Do you know him?" she whispered. Bailey felt something wet and gasped, jerking her hand back. Her fingers were smeared with blood now. "What happened to you?" Bailey whispered, horrified. The woman slowly stepped out from behind the tree. Bailey's mouth gaped open as she stared. She was filthy, covered in dirt and leaves, her long dress torn in places, her hair obscuring half her face. Bailey could see one wide brown eye peeking out behind the curtain of dark hair. Most disturbingly, she was covered in blood, clutching at her side with one hand. "Oh my God, are you okay?" "No," the young woman croaked out. "Please, help me." "Come on," Bailey grabbed her hand again, all her fear replaced with worry. The woman was so cold, she must be going into shock. "Come with me, we're going to get you back to the camp, we're going to call an ambulance." Bailey tried her best not to panic, it wouldn't help anything. The woman, however strange she was, clearly needed emergency medical services. What would she do if she collapsed on the trail? What if she died? Bailey still worried about Millie, but she would have to search for her later. "What happened to you?" Bailey asked again, pulling the woman along with her to the edge of the woods. She could just see the hiking trail through the trees. At some point, she stopped holding the woman's hand and slung her arm over her shoulder, supporting most of her weight as she staggered along. Bailey shivered, the woman's cold seeping into her own body. You could see bloodstains transferring onto her clothes.
"Where is he?"
the woman asked again. "Who? The person who did this to you? Oh my God, is he still out here?" Now Bailey was terrified for a new reason. There was possibly a killer prowling around the forest, and at this moment she didn't have much more than 35-pound Millie to protect herself with, and she didn't know where Millie was. They were almost on the trail now. Oddly, Bailey wasn't that tired from supporting the woman's weight. She was so light. It was almost like Bailey was just supporting the weight of a heavy dress she was wearing. Blood was now pouring from the woman's wounds, and she was slowing down as they got closer to the trail. "We're almost there. You can do this. You'll be at the hospital soon, I promise." Bailey tried her best to sound encouraging. She hoped she was successfully masking the fear in her voice.
"I can't leave," the woman whispered.
They were now at the very edge of the trees, just a few feet away from the trail. "Of course you can. I'm right here to help you." Bailey tried to pull her along, mindful of her injuries.
"I can't leave," she repeated.
"Bailey!" Sam's shout echoed from the distance. "Bailey!" She could hear Millie barking alongside him. Relief surged through her. Sam had come looking for her and found her, thank God. And now he could help her carry this woman. "Sam!" Bailey called as loud as she could. "Sam, help!" Bailey turned back to face the woman, trying to put on an encouraging smile. "That's my boyfriend, Sam. He'll help us. He can carry..." Bailey cut off, horrified, as she watched the woman in her arms slowly fade from a solid, real woman into a strange gray shadow. She felt a cold breeze flow past her as the shadowy woman straightened up, slowly walked back out into the forest. Bailey stood there, mouth gaping open as her mind tried to process what she saw, to come up with some sort of rational explanation. She screamed as a hand clapped onto her shoulder. Sam turned around, wrapping his arms around her. Millie jumped on her legs, barking happily. "You scared the shit out of me," Sam's voice shook. His face was a mix of relief and anger. Where the hell have you been? Millie ran back to me alone. Why'd you come so far down this trail? I've been looking for you for what feels like half an hour. Are you hurt? Are you...
Sam, Bailey cut him off. There's a woman in the woods. She needs help. She's really hurt.
We have to find her. She just walked away from me. We need to find her and get her help now. I think someone stabbed her or something. Bailey could hear the panic in her voice.
Whoa, whoa, slow down. A woman? Where?
I haven't seen or heard anyone else.
Yes, there is, Bailey asserted, louder than she intended to. I was just helping her get to the trail. I found her in the woods where Millie ran off.
Sam looked at her now like she was crazy, or worse, like he was concerned. Bailey, are you okay? He asked gently. Did you fall? Maybe hit your head?
Stop, she yelled, growing frustrated. I'm telling the truth. I saw a woman in the woods. She kept asking me if I know where he is. I saw her covered in blood. I was trying to get her back to camp, but I think you scared her. We need to find her right now and get her to a hospital. She's going to die.
Sam's eyes lit up with a realization that frightened him.
Holy shit, he muttered.
Bailey, I know this is going to sound insane, but I was just talking to another family at the campsite. They were telling me this crazy story about a girl who got killed here like 100 years ago or something, and her spirit haunts the woods. Everything you're saying sounds exactly like the story they were telling me. I think you saw her.
What?
Said Bailey, offended. A ghost, Sam? I didn't see a ghost. She turned towards the woods.
It's okay. Sam is a good guy. We're here to help. Just tell us where you are.
She started to go out into the woods, and Sam grabbed her arm.
Bailey, there's no one else here.
I'm looking, Bailey shot back, with or without you. After a brief tense moment, realizing she was not going to be talked out of it, Sam conceded.
Okay, Bailey, I'll help you.
The two of them combed the area then with their flashlights, back where Bailey had seen the ghost. Millie was now totally calm. No growling, snarling, baring her teeth, nothing. Also, after several minutes of searching, Bailey remembered the blood on her hand. It was gone. There was no trace of blood on her anywhere anymore. She now started to really entertain the possibility that she had just had an intense encounter with the dead. She asked Sam what the people had said back at the camp, and the story Sam heard was almost exactly what had happened to her. They headed back to camp, and Bailey was surprised how quickly she was able to fall asleep after all of that. The experience had taken a lot out of her. Bailey and Sam checked the woods again the following morning when they woke up. There was nothing. No footprints, no blood trails, no body. It was like it had never happened, like Bailey imagined the whole thing. Then back at camp, they ran into some other campers who told Sam the story about the girl in the woods again in front of Bailey. If there was still any doubt that Bailey had seen a ghost, had touched one, this erased it. Bailey didn't want to stay another night at the campsite. She and Sam packed up and left. As they drove away, Bailey felt so much sadness for the girl in the woods. How terrible to be stuck in an endless cycle, repeating your terrible last day on Earth. Bailey felt a little stuck herself now. She couldn't stop replaying her encounter over and over in her mind. She knew she'd never be able to forget her face, her cries for help, or the way she disappeared back into the forest.
Ugh, that is so uncomfortable. Also, I mean, I would yell at you the way that Bailey yelled at Sam.
Yeah?
Don't you ever act like I'm crazy or bumped my head.
Okay, no matter what you say.
No matter what.
All right.
No matter what. I can say anything I want.
Anything at all. And I just assume that you're sane and logical.
Exactly. Yep.
All right.
Just so you know.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Okay. Do you have pictures to go along with this?
I do. I have a pretty picture of the pond. It's a very scenic little area.
Oh, yeah.
It's a nice little small, like, you know, state park. And then this next one, this is a part of the trail. The woods around the trail is super thick. Easy to see how creepy, you know, they might feel at night. I mean, they're dark, you know, down in there going in the day. And then this is another piece of the trail. And again, these woods, you know, going to look super creepy at night.
Yeah. It's a nice trail.
Very nice. Yeah, trail. Like raised trail there.
Mm-hmm. I love when they do that.
Yeah, me too. And then another picture, a little picnic table near the campsite surrounded by fog. Just kind of shows how creepy this area can look in the right season. And then finally, just someone having fun showing how really creepy the woods around this park can look at night.
Ah.
Yep.
Yep.
That would, yep. Yeah.
A little person in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Someone standing out there.
God.
Woods at night, always scary.
Always.
Instinctively.
Yeah, and like, okay, also, Bailey, who is going to walk the dog at night on a dark trail without a flashlight by
herself? She did have a flashlight.
She did?
Yeah, she did. She carried it with her. I didn't really mention it as the story went on, but she did have one with her.
Oh, okay. So at least she had
that.
She
at least she had that. But still.
But even still, it is so dangerous, like if you're just going to go off on your own like that, to go the opposite direction of where someone would look for you. That's how people die.
She got cocky. She'd been camping a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know how these things work. No big deal.
Check me out.
And people do things like that all the time. You know, it's like, I guess, that's what, so human irritating. Nature to do a lot of risky behavior. Like, I'm always surprised when maybe like after a show at a club or something, I'm heading back to the hotel, or, you know, I'm just out like in a car late at night,
mm-hmm.
and I'll see a person, and then sometimes like a smaller person,
mm-hmm.
just out for like a midnight or a 1 a.m. jog.
Oh, that makes me so angry. Like, what are you thinking?
Especially in like an area where it's not really that well lit, and I'm just like, wow, and they got their headphones on, so it's like you can't even hear if someone's waiting for you. I mean, and I know most of the time you are going to be fine.
I know, but
statistically,
what about,
but you're also like, you've really increased the odds
mm-hmm.
that something's going to happen to you.
There's always going to be that one person, that one time, in that one place.
Yeah.
Ah, I know, it freaks me out. I was thinking about when we took Penny, before there was Ginger.
Oh, I know what you're going
to
say.
When we took Penny to Glacier, and she saw a deer, and just off she went.
That freaked me out. I was so sad. Like, Renfer, I was so worried. Yeah, Penny just shot. We had her off leash. We thought she could handle it. Nope.
I wouldn't let her off leash now.
No, I wouldn't let her off leash now. We didn't realize truly how insane she was about deer. And yeah, she was still kind of puppy-ish.
Oh yeah, she was still little.
I think she was less than one.
Mm-hmm.
And she shot off after that deer that ran down the trail. And she must have ran. Oh my gosh. I was sprinting as hard as I could. And I knew like I was getting like a cramp. And I'm like, I can't keep running much longer. I was screaming, Penny! Penny! Finally, thank God she stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And then just looked back like, hey, Dad.
Hi. That was fun.
That was fun.
I know. Oh, she's lucky. She's so cute. The kids and I were like panicking.
Mm-hmm.
Tears were starting to well in people's eyes.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, oh my God, our baby. Then we knew that she would get eaten alive in the woods because mm-hmm. she's just a little thing.
And then we learned a lesson again with Ginger, a deer in the neighborhood. Remember, Ginger ran down the street, ran around the corner.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm, that was before we fenced the front yard.
That's right.
And that was when both of them lost their off-leash privileges anywhere outside the yard forever.
True.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They can't be trusted.
No, they cannot. Especially Ginger.
Mm-hmm.
Penny less. Ginger is... Mm-hmm. uncontrollable in that way.
She's a wild one when she sees other animals.
I know. Even just like a little squirrel, a bird, you'll be in the car and...
Oh, yeah.
She
starts to shake.
Uh-huh.
She gets so worked up.
She does have a good sniffer on her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you could get her to calm her sounds, she would be a great hunting dog.
She would. Right. Currently, she'd be the worst hunting dog.
She would ruin everything.
She would be a great hunting dog for all the animals you're trying to hunt because she would give them so much notice to get out of the get out of the area.
Run for your lives. She would even run with them, really.
True.
She would be very helpful.
Are you ready to move on?
Yeah, that was a good story. I like that one.
Okay, good. I like that one as well. And I probably shouldn't. I'm probably killing it.
Oh, no.
By hyping it up. I really like this next one.
Okay.
I'm curious if it's going to creep you out like it creeped me out. Before I take us to a terrifying church basement encounter,
ooh,
time for a quick in-between story sponsor break. Thanks for listening, creeps and peepers. Now time for some Nebraska horror.
Nebraska.
No setup. We get right into it.
Okay, go for it. Just dive right in, Dan.
It's time now for the tale, there we go, of Hell's Waiting. Before my dad's funeral reception, it had been years, around 20 actually, since I'd set foot in the non-denominational community church in a little central Nebraska town I'd grown up in. Almost nothing had changed. Same pews, same old paintings of Jesus with a lamb or with his apostles on the walls, same pastor even, Pastor Evans. Less hair on his head, what hair he still had was a lot whiter than it once was, but same fiery look of the utmost conviction of righteousness in his eyes. I was jealous of that look as a kid, and I felt jealous now. I'd envied how nice it must be to have no doubts that what you believe was the truth and the only truth. Paul, good to see you, son, but hate the circumstances, he said, taking my hand in his firm, perfect grip before continuing. So sorry that your father was taken from us. God must have needed him sooner than we were ready to see him go, son. Thank you, Pastor Evans, I said with a voice that sounded calmer than what I felt. It still hadn't really hit me yet, the finality of it all. I still felt almost as if my dad's funeral was something my dad and I would joke around about later. He'd laugh that big laugh of his, nod his head when I asked, remember that time you died and we all talked about your life? Before Pastor Evans could ask what church I was attending back in Chicago, and then I had to either lie and tell him or tell him that this was the last church I'd ever went to, my Aunt Tracy walked up and saved me with a question for Pastor Evans about how to use the projector to show some pictures from my dad's life. And giving me a great out, she asked me to head down to the basement, grab a 7-Up liter bottle and a meat and cheese tray from the fridge and some orange juice and sherbet from the freezer so she could make that classic church punch. When she started to explain how to find the fridge and the freezer, I cut her off and told her I knew exactly where they were. If nothing on the main floor where the services were held had changed, I highly doubted the basement had gotten a remodel. And after turning the corner behind the main door, descending down the second half of the staircase, I'd learned I was right. Flipping the old fluorescents on and heading to pass some long tables and folding chairs, the basement brought back some fond memories. It's where we had, and I imagine they still have, weekly youth group. Some of my friends and I, Sarah, Julie, Ryan, Eddie, and Melody, we'd meet down there almost every week with Mrs. Lancaster for 2, maybe 3 years. And then she died, and Miss Williamson took over and, well, just wasn't the same with her. And we disbanded. Miss Williamson. Hadn't thought about her in over a decade. She was, as my dad would say, something else. A real battle axe. She died about a dozen years back in the basement, actually. When I heard that, I checked in with some old youth group buddies on Facebook, and no one had a nice word to say about her. Not even Melody, the sweet Christian girl who helped run a youth group of her own now. And Melody could find the good in anyone, except Miss Williamson. She was just mean. She turned our youth group around from discussions about God's love and forgiveness into nothing but damnation and hellfire. A lot of Satan talk, like a weird amount. And when she talked about how all the world's wicked sinners were going to burn in agony for all eternity, you always got the feeling that she counted you among their lot, and that she was real excited for you to burn. The hint of a wicked smile always hanging around the corner of her mouth. There were some weird rumors about her death. The paper said nothing more than that she'd passed away at the age of 67. What we heard is that she hanged herself. That she was found clutching a crucifix, upside down, holding it with a smile on her face. Probably just a crazy rumor, right? But oddly specific. I was standing in front of the basement fridge, lost in thought, thinking about Miss Williamson, hanging there from the ceiling, rope around her neck, digging into her skin, eyes bulging, body swaying back and forth over a tipped chair, clutching a cross upside down, with that sly, wicked smile of hers stretched out into a Cheshire grin. When out of the corner of my eyes, I saw the shadowy form of a woman zip down the hallway to my left. It was accompanied by the worst case of chills I've ever had. And even though the figure was moving fast, and had only seen it out of the corner of my eye, I knew immediately it was her, Miss Williamson. Someone that cruel just doesn't die and go away easily. I'd believed in ghosts for most of my life, but this was the first time I was convinced I'd actually seen one. I wanted to run out of that basement right then and there, but it wouldn't be fair to Dad. Wouldn't be fair to everyone else grieving him, to take him out of the spotlight with gossip about his son, a man in his 30s now, getting too spooked in the basement to be able to bring the punch and meat and cheese up. So I steadied myself and opened the fridge. And when I reached in to grab the meat and cheese, that damn shadow shot down the hall in the other direction. And this time I heard it say something in Mrs. Williamson's voice. He's waiting for you, Jason. He's already got your dad, and soon you'll burn too. I wanted so badly to believe this was all in my imagination, but if it was all in my head, why was the basement getting so much colder now? Maybe because you're standing in front of an open fridge, you idiot, I told myself. I quickly grabbed everything out of there, set it on the counter, then turned around to open the freezer and had to stifle a scream. Just for a moment, I saw her standing there, not a shadow, Miss Williamson, plain as day, dressed like it was 20 years ago. The sly smile right there on her mouth, those dark, cold eyes of her. They said they were brown, but damned if they didn't always look black. Those eyes staring into my soul, judging me, condemning me, and then, after less than a second, she was gone. I quickly grabbed what I needed out of the freezer, put most of it in an old grocery bag laying on the counter, carried that bag in one hand, tray of meat and cheese in the other, and started to walk back towards the stairs to the main level. And before I turned the corner to leave the kitchen, I stopped. I heard creaking.
Creak, 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 creak.
I knew exactly what was making that sound. I knew if I kept walking, I'd see Miss Williamson's body swinging back and forth, the rope around her neck. Upside down, crossed in her hands, smile on her face. I knew her eyes would open. She'd look right at me. She'd say something terrible, something I'd never be able to forget no matter how hard I tried. God damn it, I didn't want to give her that moment, but the alternative was to make a scene at my father's funeral. Fuck her, I thought. Fuck that nasty old bitch. On shaky legs, with all the courage I could muster, I marched forward, out of the kitchen. I wish I could have just closed my eyes, but I didn't remember the layout that well. Knew if I tried walking blind, I'd end up tripping and spilling everything. I told myself not to look directly at her, but of course, that's exactly what I did. And sure as shit, there she was, hanging from the ceiling, swaying back and forth, holding that cross just like I'd heard, giant grin on her face, dark, hateful eyes staring right at me, and then her mouth moved as I heard her speak. I knew you'd burn. You were a kid, Jason. I know it now. Your dad is waiting for you. Hell waits, Jason. Fuck you, Mrs. Williamson. The only one in hell is you, you crazy bitch, I said as I kept walking. And then as I scurried the last 20 feet towards the exit of the stairs that led back to the chapel, I watched her face distort into something demonic. She laughed so loud I was sure everyone upstairs must hear it. You'll burn, Jason, just like your father.
As I shot out the door, I waited for her icy dead hand to grab my back, grab my neck, pull me back in. Thank God it didn't happen. What did happen was that I almost ran over Pastor Evans. I slammed right into him on the landing between the chapel and the basement, and he looked as shook up as I was. "Sorry, Pastor," I said as I hit him. He grabbed my arms to steady me and kept me from dropping anything. He asked, "Are you okay?" And in that moment, I knew that he knew. When I told him I was fine, he said, "She can't hurt you, Jason. I'm sorry I haven't been able to get her out, but she can't hurt you." His words scared me almost as bad as everything I'd just seen. He just confirmed all of it. Thank God the rest of my dad's reception went off just fine, I think. Honestly, I can't remember a whole lot of it. It was hard to stop thinking about the basement, about Pastor Evans knowing about her. After the reception was over, I made sure I wasn't alone when I walked out of the front of that building. I didn't want to give her the chance to have one last moment with me. I'll never walk back in, I don't think. Not unless my family holds another funeral service there. And if they do, Aunt Tracy can go to the basement and get her own goddamn snacks.
Somehow I feel like that was a little add-on at the end. You were like, this would be pretty funny.
Maybe.
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 Maybe, Aunt Tracy. That's fucking scary.
Yeah. Yeah, that one, when I was working on it, gave me the chills more than most stories. Just the visual bothered me.
Well, what I don't like is that even a priest couldn't get it out, because that's one of the things, like,
oh, or pastor, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's still a priest.
Yeah.
You know, the religious head of the church.
Yeah.
It's like, if they can't get her out, who can get her out? Because we always say, like, oh, well, like, get a priest, get someone to come over and bless your house. Like, that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
A very religious place with a very religious person, and they still can't get rid of her.
Yeah.
I don't like that. So they might be stuck with her.
Yeek.
Indefinitely.
Scary stories.
Yeah.
Wow. There was no pictures associated with this story, just an anonymous post.
And you didn't find any, like, weird things that you feel like you need to show me?
I did.
I figured.
I did. I found, I tried just finding pictures of, like, haunted churches. And I came across, I mean, we'll probably end up telling a story set in this place.
What in the hell is going on in here?
This is a supposedly haunted church in the Czech Republic. In 2012, art student Jakub Hadrava used St. George's Church in the village of Lukova for his senior art thesis. He filled the Catholic church's pews with ghostly figures made from plaster casts of live models draped in white cloth.
Oh.
And then the no longer used church became a tourist attraction. This church fell into disrepair after World War II, then was closed down decades later when pieces of the ceiling fell on some people attending a funeral there.
Ugh.
So that felt fitting, considering what the story was that I was telling.
Yeah.
And then this, so this next picture, creepiest church basement pic I could find. This is called the Bone House. It's an ossuary, a depository for the bones of the dead under St. Michael's Church in Vienna, Austria. That's all skulls on top there.
I was just going to ask if those are real skulls and real bones.
Yep, and then real bones underneath.
Fun.
That church dates back to the 13th century.
My God, I don't even think I could go in there.
Oh, and then upstairs in the same church, in the chapel, here's a picture of one of the mummified corpses. And this is
what?
Inside the altar, like built into the back of the altar. There's like glass cases with actual skeletons of people who attended this church hundreds of years ago. There are supposedly hundreds of mummified corpses all around and beneath that church.
But why?
I don't know how it started. But I guess this church, there was a scene in Fiddler on the Roof where there's a marriage scene and they shot it in that church. And I guess there's a quick glimpse most people didn't notice, where if you like were to freeze it and look in, you can see like, oh God, there's skeletons in the back of that altar. But yeah, it's weird, right?
And they still hold mass there?
Yeah, that one's an active church.
No way.
Yep, with all just a shit ton of skeletons.
I mean, I don't go to church, but I would definitely not go to that church. Holy shit. Just why? And are they still mummifying people today?
I don't know enough about it. I'd have to do more research.
Oh, boy. Well, I bet
I just mostly like the pictures and then got a few details.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that church is super haunted.
Probably.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So many stelicans. So many stelican bones.
Oh, Momoa's stelican bones. How did that little song go? I don't want no stelican bones.
It was just so fun when she would sing it.
Oh, it was so cute.
For years, our two favorite words for Monroe to say were Vietnamese, because she would like to go to, she liked pho.
And she would say Vietnamese.
It's Vietnamese.
I want some Vietnamese too.
And skeletons were stelicans.
Stelicans. Mm-hmm.
I hope there's no Stelikans at that Vietnamese place.
It was the cutest. And Yambi.
Yeah, and zombies were Yambis.
Yambis.
Yep, one of my favorite memories of her when she was younger playing, I forgot about this game actually.
Minecraft?
Plants versus Zombies.
Oh, I thought she was playing Minecraft.
She might have been, but I'm pretty, no, actually, no, it wasn't. It was Plants. Yeah, we played Minecraft from that time, but it was Plants versus Zombies. And she just, you know, tapping the screen to like fire the little whatever weapon she had at the zombie. Die, Yambi, die. Die, Yambi, die.
Well, the context of it was the best.
Oh, and she was...
she was in the bathroom.
Naked, because she had just finished peeing.
Yeah, why she was peeing naked, no one will ever know. But you just like, you just hear her in the bathroom, die, Yambi, die. Mm-hmm. And just the way the layout was, like, I'm like, what are you doing? And I came around the corner and she's just there, naked, standing up above the toilet. Die, Yambi, die. Die, Yambi, die. She's great. A funny kid.
Mm-hmm, true.
Oh, Momoliciousness. Now she's like, 14-year-old, just dyed her hair blue. Little teenager with her little Snapchat filter. Like,
oh, she's into Snapchat.
My God. Was not my idea to let her have it. I did not advocate for that.
We do control who she gets to be friends with on there for now. So she's not just totally Roman.
No, and I know every parent says this about their kids, whatever, but she, like, I think we've done a good job of scaring her into, like, don't talk to strangers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We hope.
I mean, well, she can't get anywhere on her own. Monroe's not like a kid that will go anywhere on her own in the sense that, like, she's not sneaking out.
True. So, knock on wood.
She can't drive yet.
She stays that way. Yeah.
Well, probably not.
But probably not.
She's going to be like her dad.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. She's going to be the troubled one.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, boy. Teenagers.
Drew.
Oh, such assholes. If you're listening and you're a teenager, go find your parents and tell them how much you love them and appreciate them.
Tell them they're awesome. Give them a hug.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell them that you're sorry for being such a dick.
Mm-hmm.
And I assure you that will go a very long way. Tell them that you don't, in fact, hate them, despite popular belief in your household.
And maybe throw in, you know what? Maybe I don't know everything.
Oh, my God. And how about, like, I do respect your opinions. Maybe, you have lived a lot more life than I have.
Maybe I don't have all of life figured out at the age of 14 or 15.
Oh, my gosh. And also, like, capitalism's not so bad.
That's a weirdly specific one, but yes.
Well, that's specific to our household. My God. Oh, these kids. They'll be the death of us yet. That'll be the real scary story.
Oh, man.
When we die and we haunt our teenagers. Okay. That would be fun. That would be great. Do you have a squishy wishy?
I do. I have the OG version of Layla right here.
OG Layla. Remember that one time we were doing a show and you ripped Layla's head off and you threw it at me?
Oh, yeah. That was fun.
What episode was that? I don't remember.
That was a while back. I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't think it was fun.
Everybody else did.
It was probably pretty funny to watch. All right. Well, you ready to dive into a haunted kid story?
I am.
A little attachment for this kiddo?
Scare me.
I mean, I hope so. Also, I mean, just think about, like, what would you do if... Okay, Kyler's a great example, because he doesn't believe...
True. Hardcore skeptic.
Hardcore skeptic, atheist.
Yes.
Like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of impressive at such a young age. A little bit sad that at such a young age, he already doesn't believe in anything outside of what he can see and touch.
True. He's the one I hope has an intense experience. That would be great
for him. Yes. Yeah, he could use it.
Could.
He could use to...
Soften him up a little bit.
Hmm. Yeah. But... What if you could see something attached to him? Or what if you were, like, suspicious that something was attached to him? How much time would you want to spend with him then?
I don't know. It would explain a lot.
I was actually thinking when we started this episode, I was like, I should probably sage his room. I should probably smoke cleanse his room, hide some crystals in there. I'm going to go to the crystal shop today and find out, like, which of these crystals are good for asshole teenagers? And then see, and then, like, hide them everywhere. He'll never know. He doesn't clean his room. So he won't find them.
True. Fair.
Right?
Right.
This is a good plan. Okay, well, let's see what's going on over here. Hey, Dan and Lindsay, I found the show a few months ago and have been binging ever since. Now let's get to my story. I love it. Just get right in.
Mm-hmm.
When I was about 4 years old, my parents bought some property in the middle of nowhere, Missouri, on a one-lane gravel road on what was once the Trail of Tears. While building the house and throughout my whole childhood, we experienced little things. Mostly stuff not being where you thought you left it, for us to find it in that exact place we left it after we stopped looking for it. And then we had one of those big ass sound systems from the 80s that would that would randomly turn on full blast even when unplugged. Random noises that didn't make sense could be heard, and pets barking at nothing. Just lots of little weird happenings. Eventually, we started saying that it was, oh, it's just the natives playing tricks on us again, and would continue on with our day. Not long after my husband and I got married and bought our house, our oldest was born. We noticed he would focus on the corners of a room or stare over our shoulders when we were holding him. It was a little unnerving since some other strange things started happening at our house almost immediately after bringing him home from the hospital. Again, nothing crazy or super scary, just an odd feeling every now and then, or a strange noise, or the broken dryer door opening all on its own. Once he could talk, we finally found out that my deceased grandparents were his, quote, friends, and that he talked to them all the time. We found this out based on a picture of them and our son's description of his friends. Said grandparents had passed away when I was about 4 years old in their old house that was about a mile west of our home, and they were buried about 1,000 feet east of our house. We figured it was a phase, and if we didn't acknowledge it, he would eventually grow out of it. It's also kind of comforting to think that my grandparents would be around, looking after me and my kids all these years later. He did eventually stop seeing and talking to them, so we figured his connection with the paranormal was over. But boy, were we wrong. About 5 years ago, there was a fatal car accident just down the road from my parents' house. The kids loved spending time at the farm, and thankfully my parents loved having them there. This particular afternoon, my parents decided to take my sister and all the kids out to dinner to give me some peace and quiet so that I could take a test. I was a full-time mom, full-time college student with a full-time job. Right, I know. Right about dark, I got a call from my sister that they were stuck at the end of the road because of a car accident. She had called the cops and was waiting for them, but she didn't see anyone in the car, and so she had thought they had fled the scene. I was a corrections officer at the time and trained in first aid, so I figured I should drive down and see what was going on and if anyone needed help. When I got to the car, I realized it was really, really bad. I sent my sister and the kids to the house because they didn't need to see any more than they already had. After the police arrived and everything was under control, they released me. I went to get my kids and take them home. No one there had heard the outcome of the accident yet, though my sister had assumed the worst. She had told the younger kids that the driver was hurt, but was going to be okay, to which my 4-year-old objected, screaming that the girl had died. I got to the house and I was bleeding from the cuts I received trying to get into the car. I made a beeline straight to the bathroom to clean up before my kids could see me, but unfortunately, my oldest had other plans. That little shit camped out in a chair facing the door waiting for me. He bombarded me as soon as I walked in. He came running, screaming that the man had killed her and taken her away. Very confused, I asked him what he had seen. He told me that the man with the black and red face walked into the road and caused the girl to wreck, and then he took her out of the car and they disappeared into the woods.
Yee.
We'll never know for sure what happened, but the police said it seemed like the driver had swerved either because she forgot about the curve of the bridge or because something had been in the road. Over the next few weeks, my family did some research after my son wouldn't stop talking about it. They found a picture of a man that matched my son's description of the man from the accident. The picture was of a Cherokee shaman. Ever since, we've all noticed shadows that don't belong or extra movement just inside the tree line in our headlights. I made the mistake of using the big LED light bar on the top of our Jeep to watch the snow one night, and I'll never forget the shadows moving through the treetops. I now refuse to look at the trees unless it's bright and sunny. The woods I grew up loving and playing in now feel dark. I practically run to the safety of my truck, feeling like something is chasing me if I'm out there once the sun goes down. I hoped I would be able to say that my son hasn't experienced anything since the accident, but he just told me a few days ago about my voice that's not my voice. He hears me talking to him every day, even when I'm not there. He's been told not to listen to it and to never respond. I guess he heard it at my parents' when I was at work one day. My dad, who's a preacher, told him the easiest thing for a 9-year-old to understand. Bubba, that's not your mom. All I can tell you is that it's some kind of devil, and it's best for you not to answer.
Oh my God.
Rachel.
Yikes, Rachel.
I know.
So that girl did die in the car wreck,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like in real life.
There was a real life car accident with a real life death.
And
But I don't know if her, but Rachel doesn't clarify.
Right, if the kid was with her, go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is, what to me, what I'm left wondering is, was there a body for them to recover from the accident, or was there no body at the scene of the crime? Mm. I'm thinking, I'm thinking that the boy, her son, saw like the spirit of the girl getting taken out into the woods. But, I mean, I don't know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, it must have been that. But, but what a crazy thing to think about, like this, you know, I mean, essentially that story is about a spirit murdering somebody,
right,
like causing the accident, and then what, dragging their spirit away for what? Like that's just, that's out of,
for torture?
Out of fucking,
I don't know,
a horror movie. And, yep, then, and then adding a doppelganger to the mix, as far as like the replicated voice.
I know.
I mean, that was a really creepy story.
I know. I'm worried about this kid just in general, as I'm sure she is, because, you know, from the moment that she brought him home from the hospital, he was seeing his grandparents. Like, he clearly, I mean, not clearly, my opinion is such, sure, that he was born with a propensity to the other side. And like, suppose there's the possibility, as we say, and so many people say, yeah, well, kids are more susceptible, they're more open, right? But they kind of grow out of it in time and yada, 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 yada. But it doesn't feel like he's growing out of it.
That's like that Sixth Sense kind of thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
the I see dead people get, like what, Haley Joel Osment?
Is it Osment? I thought it was Osmond.
I think it's Osment.
Oh, I don't know.
No, it's been so long since I thought about him.
HJO, got it.
But just what a burden, what a curse. If, ugh, that was your life, if you actually could see spirits around, and like, oh, it wasn't, God, mental illness, it was just you could see past some veil into some other dimension superimposed on top of this one or
but
something.
If you have parents that don't possibly believe in that, then they do think that you're mentally ill.
Well, yeah.
And I then mean, you're really fucked.
Oh, man.
Because you're probably going to get locked away. Or at least heavily medicated,
yeah.
And not the good stuff.
Also, early on, it just cracked me up, just that mention of, just I hadn't thought about them in a while, but like giant 80s sound systems. That's,
yep,
such a funny thing that like is not around. And we never had like a nice one. We never had some crazy nice system.
I'll tell you. It's a cute story.
But we had, I mean, I just remember, you know, like friends' houses, whatever, giant speakers. And you'd have And you'd have this giant receiver that would only play like FM AM radio with a huge dial, and then like the bar that went like a long ways down the, uh-huh, receiver, and then maybe a like cassette deck.
And
all the wires.
Uh-huh.
But now we have like these fancy speaker systems, like a little tiny 5-inch ceiling speaker.
I know, like a Sonos.
Like a Sonos, and then like a little subwoofer that's all discreet.
Mm-hmm.
That combo will sound better than some insane tower speakers where they're literally 4 feet tall. They take over. They're the biggest thing in the living room. There's a set of them.
I know.
It's just so funny to think back. And then like the big speaker screens, and have like the huge series of round speakers piled up, you know,
uh-huh,
bigger one towards the bottom, go up towards the tweeters on the top. I can just picture the whole thing.
Tweeters.
Uh-huh. And they always had like the fake wood,
yes,
box.
Like grain
laminate
overlay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Or inlay. Yeah. Looking back on it, I'm like, oh man, my dad must have like, or my mom, somebody must have gotten a Christmas bonus or something, because I distinctly remember one Christmas going to JCPenney's.
Yeah.
Which is where you went for everything.
Right. JCPenney's was a shit for a long time.
Oh yeah. It's where I got my starter coat. I mean,
oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And I remember the electronics department was in the basement.
I just love an era where JCPenney's had an electronics department.
Oh, it was so great. I loved going there with my dad to just check stuff out. Because not only was it the electronics department.
Did the clerk have a flock of seagulls kind of fucking haircut?
No.
Okay.
They also had a candy counter down there, like a legit old school, like, you know, sweet little woman that's like in the middle, and like the counter that goes all around with all the glass. And my dad loves sour cherry. They're like little like candy balls.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes find them in like a rainbow.
Yeah.
But cherry. He only liked the cherry ones.
I love that lady working that counter. I love her, like, you know, putting on her little blouse.
Yes.
And she gets into her car and she's like, I'm off to the candy counter at JCPenney,
mm-hmm,
you know, where she's working for years.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we're in the basement of JCPenney's. My dad goes to the counter. He gets his bag of cherry sour balls.
Great.
We walk around JCPenney's just snacking on them. And he hones in on this Bose sound system. And it's like, well, this is happening. And also like, don't tell you. You know, like, it was kind of funny. My dad still loves a secret. No one loves a secret more than Papa said. Yeah. Sweet Lord.
Uh-huh.
And this thing, you talk about like a massive monstrosity.
Yeah.
Speakers as tall as I was. So I'm, like you said, like 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
And so the center thing was like you know, in the middle of our living room against a wall.
You have a massive stack of things.
Yes, yes. So, well, this thing, oh, it was very fancy.
Amp receiver, yeah.
It was so fancy. It had touch glass. To,
whoa,
so you,
what?
And then the door opened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you had...
It would be glass, but there would be a little magnet part.
Yes, at the top.
Yep, I can picture this system exactly.
And then you opened it, and the top was, like you said, like all the dials, all the things. Then there was a shelf. It was all shelved out.
Futuristic 80s tech.
Oh, yeah. And then it had like this thing, that thing. Well, this had a double tape deck and...
Oh, yeah.
Hold your breath. A 5-disc rotating CD player. So you would push the button and this tray would come out and you could put in 5 different CDs and then gently tap
So we've moved into early 90s here. This is like 91, 92.
Well, I was born
92.
In 83, buddy, of course.
Yeah, okay, okay.
I'm so this much younger than
this
you.
This is 90s tech.
But still 80s vibes.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, barely into the 90s now.
Oh, yeah. And so now you've got 5 CDs.
Oh, there, I remember those trays.
And you could close it and then you could hit the random button and it would play a random track off of a random CD in there. Like sometimes you'd get 2 Michael Jacksons in a row. Sometimes you'd get 1 Michael Jackson followed by 1 Gloria Estefan.
Yep, disc then 1 Phil buttons Collins. For each disc.
Oh, man.
Disc 1, disc 2, yep, all the way to 5.
And whenever my parents were not in the house, we were told not to fucking touch it. And what did my brother and I do? We cranked the shit out of
fucking
that.
Fucking jam on that.
Oh, yeah. And then we would, we have gone way off topic.
Yeah.
My brother and I would put on the tunes. We're supposed to be cleaning the house. I'm certain of it. And instead, we were recreating WWE wrestling scenes where he was the Undertaker.
Nice.
And I was probably like Bret the Hitman Hart. And we would just like wrestle with the music.
I feel like Bret the Hitman Hart went down a lot in that situation. I feel like the Undertaker, the Undertaker dominated. Always fun for the older brother, younger sister wrestling match for the older brother.
Yeah, he destroyed me.
Yeah.
Time after time after time.
Mm-hmm. Just dropping DDTs and fucking body slams.
Oh, man. My cousins would babysit and we would also have wrestling matches and they felt that I cried too much, which I'm sure feels accurate.
And they would lock you in the closet.
They would lock me in the closet and they would wrestle. Yep. And they wouldn't let me out. So
I kind of wish I could do that to you today. Like if you were at it, if you were just a little too sassy.
Excuse you?
You get too sassy, you get locked in the closet until you fucking calm down.
Okay. Nowadays, people have CPS on speed dial.
Huh?
I would call and say, my dad locked me up. And then they would come over and they'd be like, you guys seem awfully close in age. And I would tell some really unfortunate stories about you.
That was a weird way to take that.
No, it wasn't. Okay. Well.
Can we refocus on your last story? That was fun. Yeah, that was a fun ride into nostalgia.
Oh, that was great. Sorry. We normally save that for the bonus episodes, but that was... so vivid in my brain.
That was fun for us, if nothing else.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. I'll put like a little warning in the episode description. Like, if you don't like to talk about your childhood in the late 80s
skip
and early
90s, minutes.
Skip minute this to this. Oh my God. All right, well, are you ready for one more?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so this story, this was the one that I was telling you, the email was like, you know,
a crazy subject title.
Haunted toddler feet in basement or something. I was like, excuse me. So I'm really, really into this. Oh, and I love this intro. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Don't Be a Darren.
Nice.
That's a good one.
I know. I got to find more. Darren stories are hard to find. I keep wanting, but I know, can't
but
force it.
You can't force it. No, because then it's not authentic and nobody wants that.
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Jordo, and I recently found your show after running out of Ghost in the Burbs episodes to listen to.
Nice.
Yeah. Liz Sauer does a great job. She's got a couple books out too. If you guys want to check out that podcast. I tried many horror podcasts, but there was too much boring chatter and morning radio talk antics for my taste.
Ooh.
So I was thrilled to find Scared to Death. I love that you guys set an atmosphere and then jump right into the spook. All right. Well, sorry about that, Jordo. This was an exception. Growing up neurodivergent, I took things very literally and my thought process were completely based in logic and fact. I was more tightly wound than Spock, and anything unnatural or supernatural was illogical and laughable to me. That is, until my junior year of college, when I was haunted myself and could not logic away the events that happened. This is what I hope happens to our son.
I was just thinking that.
It's like he wrote this email.
Are you Kyler? Okay.
Maybe. Thank God he doesn't listen to this show. I was a mechanical engineering tech major in my third year at a prestigious technical institute in Western New York. I had agreed to move in with my ex-boyfriend, who needed another person to help share the cost of the lease on a townhouse rental. We were still having the occasional midnight fling, and moving in with him probably wasn't the smartest decision, but as it would turn out, our little affair would not be the reason I regretted moving in. Overall, there wasn't much drama between us, or among the other two housemates. Mostly, we were all just big nerds who kept to ourselves and didn't party. There was little drama between my ex and I. Excuse me. I thought I was going to sneeze. There was little drama between my ex and I, sneaking in hookups so the roommates wouldn't know. He was still closeted to most of his friends and didn't want them to suspect anything, and I was attached to him as he was my first love. There wasn't enough emotional strife between us to cause the amount of discomfort I started to feel in the house, though. I had taken the basement room, which was the most spacious and much colder, which I actually liked because I'm a giant polar bear of a man. To be very clear, I do not scare easily at all. But soon after moving in, I started to become increasingly terrified being in my room for no reason. It started with just feeling paranoid whenever I was in my room at night. I would be playing video games and would feel like someone was watching me, or I'd hear someone moving behind me. I left my door open for the most part because my roommates had to pass through my room to get to the laundry, so it wasn't unusual for them to come into my room. More frequently, though, I would get this feeling that there would be no one... More frequently, I would get this feeling, and there would be no one there. Often, it would sound like someone was doing something behind me, making noise of sorts, but as soon as I turned around and turned the volume down on my games, it would be silent again. As soon as I'd go back to my games or music, I'd start hearing this rustling sound again. I chalked it up to sound carrying through the house, but that was when the dream started. I would have the same reoccurring dream over and over, always just before I'd wake up randomly in the middle of the night. In the dream, I would be laying on the ground outside of on a very rainy night. I'd start to prop myself up to stand in front of a would-be 3 or 4 year old boy standing a few feet away from me in the rain. He was always in a yellow raincoat with a maniacal grin on his face, pointing at me. His face and extremities were tinged blue, and his lips were purple. It looked like he had suffocated or drowned. But in the dream, I had an absolute knowledge that this was not at all a boy. This was an evil incarnation inhabiting an innocent form. It would start laughing a creepy little child's laugh, and then I would wake up. I'm used to nightmares, and actually, I quite enjoy them because I enjoy horror games like The Silent Hill. But these dreams freaked me out because when I woke up, I could still hear the laughter. Normally, when I wake up from a nightmare, I can just shake it off and go back to sleep, actually hoping to continue the dream for the thrill of it. I was absolutely horrified to still hear the laughing for a few seconds upon waking up, and it only got worse as time went on. I tried to convince myself it was a bit of a sleep paralysis issue, or maybe I was still dreaming a little bit as I woke up, or maybe it was a carbon monoxide issue. I went as far as installing carbon monoxide detectors in my room just in case, but nothing I could think of could explain the progression of the following events. The longer I had this repeated dream, the more happened after I woke from the dream. Soon, I heard the footsteps of children racing around my room. Not just an occasional soft step, but clearly pronounced little pitter-patters racing around my bed and throughout the room. Stranger still was that I was occasionally hearing the faint sounds of rain in my room or trickling water, even when the weather outside was completely clear. These sounds became more and more pronounced and lasted longer and longer upon my waking. It got to the point where I could not get back to sleep because the sounds were keeping me awake. I still refused to believe it was anything paranormal, convinced that I was either crazy or there was some logical explanation I hadn't come up with yet. Soon, however, one night would change my views on the paranormal forever. I decided to have some friends over one night because I had the house to myself. We watched some movies, hung out, and chatted and acted like idiots together, laughing a lot. It was a much-needed, happy evening, and by the end of it, my friends were too tired to go back home, and so we decided to have a big sleepover. Sleeping bags and blankets were set up in my room, and we all went to bed. A few hours later, I suddenly snapped awake, only to find everyone else was also suddenly startled awake. They all looked scared, and one of my friends turned to me and said, "Do you hear that? The footsteps and the laughter?" Coming out of my sleep stupor, I heard a faint laughter, which tapered off quickly. But the little running footsteps of children's sneakers on the carpet was loud and unmistakable.
Yee.
There were 4 of us there, and all of us heard it. I had not told a single one of them about what I was experiencing in the house, so I was shocked, to say the least, that they were also hearing this. After explaining what had been happening to my friends, we decided to go spend the rest of the night in their apartment. And for a while after that, I spent most of my free time at their apartment, frequently crashing on their couch or floor. They were understanding at first because of how creepy the experience was for all of us, but I soon overstayed my welcome, and they told me I couldn't be there all of the time. When I returned to my house, things only got worse. I continuously dreamt of the blue-skinned demon boy and would be startled awake by the sound of laughter and the louder and louder footsteps around my bed. Now, when I first woke up, I could also see flashes of him standing in the corners of my room. The dripping, leaking water sounds were constant, and my room felt completely oppressive and unwelcoming, no matter the time of day. I became so paranoid and scared that I salted around my bed and placed a cross under it just for protection. The last straw was when I woke up one night from the same dream, and there was a black void over my face. It was a formless, blackest of black void hovering over me. There was an incredibly strong pressure on my chest, and I was suffocating. I finally worked up the energy to start to push myself out of bed, and the void darted off, looking like a black cape blowing in the wind. I was completely out of breath and felt lightheaded, and the room was more alive than ever with all of its noises. I don't remember how I spent the rest of that night, but I do know that I didn't go back to bed, and I left the house early for campus to get away. I spent the last 1 to 2 months of that year crashing on the couch at my fraternity's house. My best friend at the time was one of my fraternity brothers, so we basically hung out 24/7 for the remainder of that year. He was really interested in the paranormal and was understanding of me crashing on the couch at the house, and while I was having a personal identity crisis, I was now forced to believe something highly illogical. He at least made a safe space for me to share my experience and feel a little less crazy. I'm not sure what that entity was, but I don't think I want to know, and I hope I never encounter it again. I do have a much more open view of what existence and reality is these days, and as you say, only one of these stories has to be true. Unfortunately for me, I had to experience the true story for myself. Keep it scary, Jordo.
Jordo. That was a great story.
It's a great story, right?
Mm-hmm. Good and creepy. And I liked that it went from like, you know, in the beginning there was moments where, and I'm sure Jordo just being like such a skeptic, especially when he was younger,
yeah,
would agree with this where it's like, okay, maybe that was just a dream. Like, you know, like, oh, okay, I'm hearing things after I wake. There is like your brain can take a second to kind of like shift from like that one state of consciousness or
absolutely,
you know, to another and things that's been documented. Like the like, yeah, you know, dream kind of moments can kind of like linger on. Maybe that's the shadow you saw.
I know. And out of the corner of my eye, it looked like the whole screen just went black. I'm like, what just happened?
And then that real turning point in that story for me was when he was with, there was four of them with three other people.
Uh-huh.
And they all heard the pitter patter of the little blue demon boy, as he called him, like, you know, together.
Yeah.
And that he hadn't been talking about this thing to them before.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that would be such a crazy shift of maybe being able to hold on to like, is this just nightmares and I'm freaking right, myself out? And like, no, okay, now other people are hearing it too. And then I thought that was an interesting transition too, where this Spock-like you know, skeptic,
yeah,
went to then putting a cross and under his bed and salting, like,
I know,
just covering like all these bases. So he was freaked out.
He was freaked out. I loved that detail of the story too. Uh-huh. I thought it was really great that Jordo included that because it's like, yeah, because again, like you, I was thinking about Kyler the whole time where I'm like,
mm-hmm,
if all of a sudden Kyler was like, Lindsay, I've put a cross under my bed, I would be scared.
Yeah, me too.
I would know
of
that
all the people in the house. Yep.
Yep. Of all the people in my life.
True, true. Because he's the most diehard, thinks all this stuff.
Oh,
I
yeah,
mean,
he will die on that hill.
Yes, yes. He's. I mean, yeah. He is. He's not a creep or a peeper.
No.
He's just like, what are you guys doing over there?
Like we were talking about at our dinner table, everything yeah, is on the table: sex, yeah, drugs, and rock and roll. And we were talking about psychedelics and like different drugs and how they're using it for PTSD and like just talking about it in a logical sense.
Expanding consciousness and spirituality.
He just shut it down. He's like, I don't need any of that because there's nothing beyond this. Like, why would I want to like pretend to explore something that doesn't even exist?
Right.
And I was like, so you're not very deep. Okay. I was just like, oh, like that's crazy to me. I've never met anyone in my yeah, life who doesn't at least want to dig into their subconscious.
This story gives me hope though.
You know, it's like,
and you know, like, I mean, I was definitely of one persuasion when I was a teen. I mean, in some ways, you know, like I was such a dick. I mean, I was such, for me, it was like an anarchist.
Well, your grandma didn't think you were a dick. I just talked to her yesterday.
Well, I hit it pretty well. I was sweet with the family. I had a side of me
uh-huh,
that wanted to burn it all down and sometimes would burn things down.
I wish that there was like a sweet to family side. I could handle that. I could handle like being just like an asshole in the world.
Oh man.
I know.
Well, we love him.
We do. But yeah, but seriously though, like back to the story. Yeah. I mean, of all the people in my life,
mm-hmm,
he would be the person that if he told me, if all of a sudden he was like crystals, salt, what, like oh, any yeah, of that, I would be like,
we'd all be nervous.
Oh boy. And also I would have to go save him. because like the mom in me is like, I'll be right there, buddy. I'll be on the next flight to wherever you are.
Yeah.
And I'll bring all of my stuff.
Party Friday's so happy. I can help you.
I know.
I got the tools.
He'd probably be like, I got it. Don't worry. I can do it myself. I'm like, no, let me come with my box. Oh, moms.
Oh, man. Oh,
we're always overbearing to some degree. Okay. Well, do you want to go first with your
Annabelles? I got them all queued up.
All right. Go for it.
I would like to thank the following Annabelles for, you know, helping us with our, you know, charitable contributions and for supporting the show and enjoying the bonus content. Caitlin Williams, Shuler Hall Gilmore.
That's a great name.
Yeah. Shuler Hall Gilmore. Yeah. Ciara Hallbrook, Hoje Montez, Jacqueline Deonda, Lloyd Benson, Michelle Miller, Sprinkles, Sarah Sassy Walrus.
Oh, nice.
Danielle Madej, Heather Johnson, Heather Barclay, Jelly Hernewell, Clancy Glover, Day Humphreys, Connor Sopp, Jordan Chilson, Caroline, Drew Patterson, Laura Yanovsky, Marcel Manuel, Stephanie Skelton. Oh, makes you think of Stellikins again. Abby, Jamie Elizabeth White, Amanda Lidster, and Bethany Birdsall.
Okay. I would like to thank the following Annabelles for their continued support. Adam R. Rogers, Antonio Acosta, Laura G., Colin Ewing, Aaron Cox, Daria Underwood, Christian McConey, Chris Green, Casey Tagg, Briseida Salis, Alyssa Chavez, Ashlyn Schlicht, Angie Robinson, Esmedeus, Will Amarello, Whitney Laird, Lauren Owens, Jared Agnew, Marianne Zeladon, Daniel S. Sleff, Seraphim Kinder, or is that, no, I think that's Seraphim, P-H?
Seraphim. Yeah.
Seraphim Kinder, Anthony Neal, Nikki Nice, Michelle Harriman, and Jackie McGill.
Nice.
Well, there were some tough ones this week. I was
Nikki
like,
Nice.
I know. Well, here's the thing about Nikki Nice.
Porn star.
Rude.
Oh, sorry. Nikki Nice?
Anyways.
Okay.
I know in my head it's Nikki Nice because I'm picturing it on the CSV file, but I wrote down Kiki Nice.
Kiki Nice.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's Nikki Nice. So, Kiki Nikki. I got you.
Kiki Nice, less popular. Porn star.
That's a different, that is a different show. All right. And the following spoopy shout outs to Liz from David. Happy anniversary. To Alex from Sierra. Happy belated birthday. Oh, this is a good one. To Bobby Tuba from, check this out. Wait for it. From Love Muffin Honey Bunches. Thanks for making me a bad magician. To Heaven from Sean, happy belated birthday. And to Livers, that's short for Olivia, from your mom, Sydney, happy 13th birthday. That's a true creeper. Get them young.
I love all the nicknames, and I love the variety of last people's last names.
There's so many.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy the interesting first names, like Seraphim. I fucking love that name. I want to have a child right now just so I can name it that.
That is our show. Thank you for continuing to send in your personal tales of terror to mystory@scaredtodeathpodcast.com. You can email us for everything else, info@scaredtodeathpodcast.com. Thanks to Logan Keith and Liz Hernandez for their work on social media, and to Logan again for running badmagicmerch.com. Thanks to Joe Paisley for producing and directing today, Zach Cohen for custom soundbed creation, Heather Rylander for organizing the My Story emails, and to book editor Drew Atana for helping format the listener stories each week. Thanks to producer Olivia Lee for finding today's first story. I found the second one. Enjoy your nightmares, creeps, and peepers. I hope you were scared to death.
Bye.
If spirits threaten me in this place, fight water by water and fire by fire. Banish their souls into nothingness and remove their powers until the last trace. Let these evil beings flee through time and space. Evil may pass through, but hath no home here within, scared to death.
Bad Magic Productions.